I want to know where his butt is because I'm fixing to kick it. So quite often things depend upon your perception. And so I'm going to talk to you about my perception of replacement heifer development today and how we take a heifer and make a cow out of her. And my perspective is this. We ranch in Northeast Texas, and I do have to keep track of the dollars. And one of the things I learned a number of years ago is that I need to keep overhead down. One of the ways I do that is keep employee costs down. And so I run one cowboy for 700 cows. And I've got about 8 cowboys, so you can do the math. And so as I look at heifer development and replacement, one of the things that you have to think about is how much labor does it take? How can we manage these to minimize labor? And again, if you do the math, if we're saving back about 1,000 replacements a year, and I've got 8 cowboys, that means that each one of them's got to kev out about 120 heifers. Kevin out 10 heifers is one thing. Kevin out 120 is something else. Or 1,000. And they do it kind of as a team effort. It's not one cowboy to every 120 cows, but they work at it in a team effort to get these heifers kevved out. The other thing that puts another little wrinkle on it is that we artificially inseminate about 700 heifers a year over a 5-day period. So, again, do the math. We've got a lot of heifers calving in a short period of time. A cowboy doesn't have time to wipe each one's nose and doctor its little navel and tag it and turn it loose and be sure it nurses. He may have 15 cows calved one morning. Or more. So, again, I'm trying to give that perspective to you as where I'm coming from on heifer management. I'm not dealing with just a handful of heifers and 2 people to look after them. So the things that we do then have to be designed to help us accomplish that objective of getting a good live calf percentage out of a set of heifers that we keep back and develop as replacements. So that's what I want to talk about this morning for just a few minutes. And again, we have to use that forgotten tool of heterosis. I can't survive without crossbred cows. Again, I tested that personally, too. I brought in a set of straightbred cattle about 10 years ago to build a seed stock herd. And learned real quickly that they weren't even the same race as my indigenous crossbred cows. They could not keep up with them at all. So, heterosis is important to us. We do crossbreed. And one of the things that we'll talk about is that also I try to use balance in everything I do. And the reason for that is because we do own our cows past the gate of the ranch. We do precondition those cows. We stock them. We feed those cattle. We also are in a program where we sell our cows on a value-based system through Ranchers Renaissance. So I cannot afford then to chase one aspect of genetics. I've got to look at balance as I select bulls to go into my operation. Now, I don't know, can you see that all right? Do the lights need dimming just a touch, maybe? It's a little blurry. All right, that's a little better. So, we try to take these heifers in and make cows out of them. We want to get to this point. So, let's look at some of the targets then that I guess we're involved with. Number one, I expect my heifers to calve at 2 years of age. Okay? That's a given. I also expect them to produce me a valuable calf the first time. I'm not looking for some, quote, throwaway calf out of that cow. So genetics is important. And also, I'm expecting that heifer to rebreed to calve as a three-year-old. So, you say, well, that's not too tough a requirement. I'm expecting 90% of those heifers to breed, and this is just my 90-90 rule. I expect 90% of the heifers to breed as yearlings, and I expect 90% of them to breed back with their first calf inside. Now, again, the resources that go into that in terms of nutrition and labor, those numbers could go up, maybe under other conditions with more inputs. But in my system, to me, those are the kind of the two numbers I shoot at. I think there's three keys then to heifer development. And quite often, I talk to people and I think they forget about the genetic aspect of it. They want to focus on nutrition. They want to focus on these other important areas. But I think genetics plays a big role in the long-term productivity of the cow that goes into my program. I can go buy a set of black heifers that were put together, and they may all look alike on the day I buy them. But they might as well be green, yellow, white, blue, and polka dot in terms of their genetics within the cow. And so if there's only one thing that I hope you might take away today is that in building a cow from a heifer, genetics is important. It goes into that heifer. Certainly nutrition is important. It's already been touched on here this morning. Growth, nutrition, energy, protein, and then had a great discussion on minerals today. And so I won't get into that because you've already had a really good run on that. I will add one thing. You can have the best mineral in the world, and if it's not located in the proper place in the right kind of feeder and the cow's not eating it, it's worthless. And so one of the things that we do measure is I require the cowboys to keep track of the mineral they put out. And we review that to be sure that we're getting proper consumption. So it's once you find that good mineral, the next question is how do we manage the mineral and the intake of that mineral in those pastures to get the proper consumption. The last thing is really just kind of general management. Some of the things we do with our heifers and how we go at it to ensure that we get the kind of results that we're looking for in the long run. Well, let's talk about genetics for just a minute. I'm real excited about the progress that we've made in some of the breed associations at looking at maternal EPDs. Those measures that we can look at of a bull to get some idea of how his heifers and his the produce of that bull are going to perform under our conditions. Growth and performance is still important because as I retain those calves and make yearlings out of them and then put them into a feeding situation, I've got to have growth. So I can't ignore growth and performance of the cattle. At the same time, in a value-based system, I need to have carcass value. And that carcass value being driven by several different things. Right now, it's primarily driven by quality grade and yield grade. Depending on your system, dressing percent is an issue. And how that value-based system is, how the arithmetic works. Because we know that, for example, there's some cattle that may have good quality grade, they may have good yield grades, but you can't get them to dress over 63%. And at the same time, we've got another set of cattle that'll dress 64.5% all day long. So there is an issue there. So carcass is important. So those are kind of the things that I try to balance in the program. Let's talk maternal for a minute. One of the big drivers in our operation is conception rates. And we do manage that. We do not keep track of calving dates on every cow. We do on all of our heifers. But the rest of the herds, we preg test in the fall, and we determine which ones are pregnant and which are open. And that's a number that we look to, is those conception rates. Again, let me set the perception. We do not breed for 90 or 120 days. My mature cows get bred for 60 days. So it's a fairly tight window that these cows must perform within. Same way on our heifers. In that case, I'm asking them to get it done in 45 days and 15 days in front of the cows. So I start my AI season on my heifers the middle of May, and those heifers that are AI'd, they go with the bulls a period of days after we finish the AI and then poop. Really, they get one cycle in there to breathe, to stay in sync. So conception rates are important to us. We measure them. We keep track of them. We know how our different herds of cattle are performing in that particular regard. Live calf percentage is something else that we measure. That's the percentage of calves we have of pregnancy-tested cows going back into the pasture in the fall. Again, to help you get some perspective, our cows are only in the pen twice a year. They're in the pen in the spring for branding and working, and the cows are back in the pen in the fall for calf weaning and preg testing. So we only get two shots at them during the year. But live calf percentage is very important to us, and there's so many things that can affect that. You've heard a great presentation this morning on reproductive diseases and how those can have a negative impact on this live calf percentage. I can tell you one in Northeast Texas that you probably haven't thought about. The black-headed vulture kills a lot of calves. How do we control predation on those new calves? It has been a real challenge for us. I guess the bottom line number that we're looking at as we develop these heifers and make them into cows then is how many pounds of calf do we get per exposed cow? And really, if you want to get down to the real arithmetic, it's how many pounds per acre are we producing on that operation? Because in our case, the capital investment is large in terms of the cost per animal unit, as almost everyone is, and so we take it back to that as well. The other thing that you have to consider is what I call the turnover rate. A cow eventually wears out for whatever reason. Her teeth either wear out or her genetics reach their end point, and she's ready to go. She fails to breathe because she's just worn out. She's old. She can't handle it anymore. So you're going to have a turnover rate in a herd beyond just your conception rate. A lot of these cows fall out on conception. But when a cow in our country loses all of her teeth, what do you do with it? She's bred. She's 14 years old. She's still bred. But you know that it's going to be a tough winter for her. And so we have a program. We manage those as well. With the prices of care where they are today, I'm one that says, look, let's separate her. Let's manage her differently. Let's get that calf out of her before we throw her away. And so we have a TLC herd that we put these broken-mouth cows into to get them through that next winter and get that next calf out of them. So all these things are maternal traits. And believe you me, I learned the hard way when I brought in a set of purebred cows from the Northwest into Northeast Texas and set them down and learned just how significant that environment is. You know, the ones that didn't die didn't breed. And so it was tough. Well, I want to go back to the beginning. The genetics, and again, my perspective here is that you're retaining your own replacements. Now, those of you that buy replacements, that's fine. You still may want to pay some attention to the genetics that are in those replacements you're buying. But I'm real interested in the genetics of the sires that I'm going to use to make my replacements. And what kind of numbers do they have? And this is an old bull that we bought several years ago. And those of you know something about Red Angus, he's got an MND. He's made my day's son. And I've cracked his progeny now for 3 or 4 years, and they're just doing super for us. They're working. Now, I want to show you some of the tools that we have as producers as we go buy bulls to come into our herd and produce the next generation of cows. Look at some of the EPDs. For example, in the Red Angus breed, we've got calvinese. We've got a heifer pregnancy EPD. We've got a calvinese maternal, which is how well this bull's heifers can calve. The top one, calvinese, is a calvinese direct. How easily his calves are born. And we've got a stayability, which is a measure of how long the females that he produced, how long they stay in the herd. And of course, you've got birth weight. So, I mean, in the Red Angus breed, for example, we have 5 traits that we can look at, maternal traits, to use as we select bulls to come back in and produce our replacements. Now, I want to tell you the story of 2 bulls here. And these bulls are straight out of the latest sire summary. Both of them are well-known bulls. And let me just show you the numbers on them. Here, and the range on this calvinese direct, I think 17 is about the highest. I don't remember all the numbers. All I know is that once you get up in the teens, it's a pretty good number. Okay? Calvinese directs are 13. Calvinese maternals 15, which is right there at the top of the range as far as acceptable. Heifer pregnancy rate 13. Again, that's on the high end of the scale again. Stayability of 20, which is right up at the top of the scale. And birth weight of a minus 3.6. This is a bull that's been used widely in that breed. Now let me show you another bull in the same sire summary and look at the information here. This is at the low end of the range. The low single digits, I forget what the lowest is. It doesn't go below 0, but let's say 1 or 0 is the lowest. Right on the bottom as far as calvinese direct. He's right at the bottom on calvinese maternal. He's right at the bottom on heifer pregnancy rates. Very low on stayability. Acceptable on birth weight. Now, when you go select a bull, are you taking time to look at any of these traits and select those the heifers going back into your operation? I'm afraid that many people are so enamored right now with carcass traits that they will go ignore the maternal traits to select a bull that's got some high marbling or a big ribeye. And ignore the things that really drive the economics of their operation. Because I really believe that this bull right here on the left, I would much rather have his heifers in my operation, and I think they're going to be stayers. And I think the bull on the right, we're going to lose a lot of his heifers in the process. Because I'm going to put pressure on them to perform reproductively. I've got 45 days the first time. They've got 60 days the second go-round to have that calf as a 3-year-old. And if they don't, they're off to 18. They're not in my main herd. I don't just throw them away. Don't get me wrong. I don't send them to the factory. I rebreed them for fall calves, and I sell those cattle because they do bring a good price. So, but they leave my operation at that point. So, this is kind of my story on genetics. I think too many times when we talk about heifer development, we forget about what are we starting with? Do we really have a good possibility of making a cow out of this heifer? And I promise you there's a lot of differences in cattle. Within breeds and between breeds. There's some breeds I don't even want to develop heifers out of, period. And there's some animals in a breed that I don't want to mess with. Well, anyway, that's kind of our goal line, is to get those calves on the ground and get them through the system and get that little cow rebred. I want to talk about what we breed those heifers to for a minute. That previous picture, you saw those were little red calves on those on that cow. And about 15 years ago, we started using Red Angus to breed our heifers to, his yearlings. And selecting bulls for low birth weight, which at that time was about the only measure, the only EPD measure we had. And so I would stack generations of low birth weight bulls and cows to buy the bulls that I'd use on my heifers. And we weigh. On that 1,000 heifers we carried out each year, we actually weigh and tag every calf with its mother. And in that process, I've learned a lot about birth weights. If you consistently select bulls for low birth weights, you'll get small calves. And if you select those bulls that also have some growth in them, that are kind of the spread bulls, they've got low birth weight, but yet they've got an adequate yearling weight, you can produce a calf that'll go to the feedlot and perform with any of them. I love to feed these little calves in that last picture. The suckers will grade 70-80% choice. They'll gain 3.2 a day, and they'll do it as efficiently as anything. They may finish at 1150 instead of 12 or 1250 because they don't have quite that yearling growth EPD. But the calves perform extremely well. We started producing a lot of our own bulls then to use on our replacement heifers. We have not brought any females onto the ranch since that one group I bought 10 or 12 years ago. We bring some bulls on the ranch, but we produce a lot of our own bulls to use on mature cows and also to use on our heifers. And so I'm able then to, you know, as you look at the rear ends of these bulls, and for years, you know, we said, oh, that's, you got to get behind the bull and decide whether you want to buy him or not. And I'm still guilty of that. I still like to look at an old bull that walks out thick and got a lot of muscle and got some volume to him. But even some of those bulls do extremely well on heifers. Even though they've got the volume, they've got the muscle, they've got all the growth you need in them, but yet those bulls will sire those 45, 50, 55-pound calves at birth. You say, well, that's pretty low. Well, I want them low. They need to spit it out. And I don't want to have to pull any calves. We pull a few calves out of that 1,000, but not many. And most of it is not hip lock, where the hooks are hung on the in the pelvis. Most of it is valvular stenosis. It is the main problem we get into. Let's talk about nutrition for just a second. The main problem we have now is valvular stenosis. In other words, the valve will not expand enough to let the little calf get his head out. That's our biggest problem. And we catch and solve most of those. That's not a big deal. But that is the main problem we run into in kids. Let's talk nutrition for a moment. Pre-weaning gain is really very important to us. Because when I talk about the selection process we have on heifers, if that little heifer did not do well on her mother, we're behind the curve already. She won't pass the weight test when we get into selecting our replacement heifers. So pre-weaning gain is important. The next one is, what does she do from weaning time to breeding time? And there's approximately 180 days there that you have to work with. And just my old rule of thumb, I want 1.5 pounds per head per day to kind of be the bottom end. I'd love for them to gain 2, but quite honestly, under pasture conditions, very seldom do I get 2 pounds. I'm usually between 1.5 to 2 pounds ADG on these heifers from weaning to breeding time. And so, you know, if you use 65% of the mature weight as kind of the weight target weight for those heifers at the time you start breeding, I'm getting there. I'm getting over that. Those heifers are weighing 7.5 to 8 typically when we start the breeding process.
And we just use grass. We try to use some winter pasture. Sometimes we have to supplement that. Catch, winter pasture did not come on as well as it should have. I sent some heifers off of the ranch for the first time in years to wheat pasture, west of us, out in Dr. Hargrove's country. And I'm going to bring them back as a group. But typically we do it there at the ranch with some type of winter pasture and supplement. We do have to supplement them sometimes. When you run short of grass, the only one thing you can do is roll out the feed wagon. We've already talked about minerals and how important that is. And certainly it's important in these developing calves, pre-weaning and post-weaning. We precondition all of our calves. And I honestly believe that those calves with a good mineral program while they're on their mothers are going to wean better. We're going to have less morbidity in those calves. We have very little mortality in the preconditioning process. I think we lost 5 calves this year out of the whole calf crop. So minerals are important, and I'm a strong believer that you need a good mineral program. From breeding to calving is an important time. You know, and basically, for us, it's going to be whatever our forage system will provide for. She needs to get a lot of that growth following the breeding season. We breed her. She's on green grass. We've got about 90 days, and she needs to hook and gin for that 90 days. Because once you get into late summer and early fall, the nutrition level is going to be low enough. She's not going to be gaining. So I want her to go as hard and fast as she can until about September. And then it's going to taper off. And hopefully we can hold her on as we go into the winter, through the winter, and come into calving. Now, I believe they need to be in body condition score 6 or better at that time as we approach calving. You know, on 1,000 heifers, they aren't all there. We're going to have a few that are certainly below that line. We'll have some that are above it. But on average, they need to be somewhere in that condition. Let's talk a little about management. The selection process. You say, well, Tom, you know, how do you go about selecting your replacement heifers? And basically, it's a weight and age. Because if a heifer is 150 pounds behind at weaning time, there's no way that she can catch up and get with the other heifers to breed during that short breeding season. And we have scales under our squeeze chutes, and we catch a weight on every heifer. And we sort based on that weight. And I set the line a little low so that we keep more than I know I need. And then once those heifers are out on grass, we give them a chance to straighten out and get on winter pasture. I'll go back through and do a phenotype sort on the heifers. If a heifer's just not looking good, is not fleshing, a heifer that's too tall or a heifer that's too short, or any of the outliers in terms of phenotype, we'll cut those off. So it's basically a weight and phenotype sort on those heifers. I start them about 15 days in front of the rest of the cows. We do have an AI season. The total season for those heifers is 45 days. And the ones that fall out of that, the 10% that cannot get this done, doesn't mean they're a bad heifer. It just means they can't play in our game because they've got to be able to breed in that period of time. Yes, I do. Okay, calving management. Once we've got her pregnant, we've taken care of the nutrition, we've got her into the calving season fine, you know, how do we manage these little heifers during the calving process? And we do bring them into traps, so we've got them confined a little more. And in our case, a trap is about 200 acres. So we can bring them into some 200-acre traps in small groups. Around a set of pens, so we've got access to a chute, a place to catch her and work with her if she has a problem. And so we bring them into traps to calve them. And basically, our cowboys ride them 4 times a day. We take them first thing in the morning. And this is fixing to start next week. We'll lay out heifers going to start dropping calves next week. And we'll check them daylight in the morning. We'll check them before lunch. We'll check them mid-afternoon, and we'll check them at dark that day. We have gone through years where we got up in the middle of the night at 12, 1 o'clock, and we'd go make a run through them, and we were saving precious few calves, and I was wearing my Cowboys plumb out. And so we've just gone to four checks a day on those heifers. We do try the deal of feeding them late in the afternoon. And I think it sure helps us in getting some of those little heifers ready for the next morning to calve. So we do use that little process on the heifers. Again, minimal input. I try to teach the guys to leave them alone. Give them a chance. Just don't rush it. Now, at dark at night, sometimes it's hard to get them to slow down. Let's go ahead and get her in and pull that one, you know. And so we probably pull some calves that don't need to be pulled. But, again, that's just kind of a personnel issue there. Now, I will say this, that my Prozac bill during calving is pretty high. Trying to keep the cowboys calm. They can get pretty upset when things are not going right. And they're not bashful about telling me, Woodward, you used a bull that is really causing us trouble, you know. And I had done that in the past. Well, I'll answer questions, but it ain't quick to really do it right. And one of the things that I haven't talked about, folks, it's just the basics. It's just like in football. You know, if you're good at blocking and you're good at tackling, you got a chance to win. If you aren't good at that, you got the fastest running back and best quarterback in the world, you aren't going to win. So there's no trick plays in developing heifers. It's not quick. It's not easy. It's not fun. It's the hardest thing we do in the beef business is to make a cow. But it can be done. But I'll say this. You better have a plan when you start the process. Use the right genetics to begin with. Put a plan together. And you can care about a lot of heifers and have some good results. Now, I'll close with this little story. A great football coach here in Texas, and you PCFs will appreciate Darrell Royal and his philosophy. But he once said that good luck doesn't come up and jump on you while you're sitting in the shade doing nothing. And that philosophy really applies to heifer development. If you just turn some bulls out with some heifers and you think you've got it done, you're in trouble already. A lot of good luck ain't going to jump on you. And there's enough bad luck jumps on you when you try to do it all right. But we found that it worked pretty well for us. And so that'll pretty well wrap up my part on the program. Thank you.
The eyes are on, so, and that includes reputation source herds. Vaccination plans, certainly, our goal is herd level immunity. We're made up of